Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, and we will get to the results of the New York primary on both sides of the aisle in two of our martinis today. They're just not the good martini, but let's start with the good martini. This is courtesy of the Associated Press. Cuban revolutionary leader Fidel Castro delivered a valedictory speech Tuesday to the Communist Party that he put in power a half century ago, telling party members he is nearing the end of his life and exhorting them to help his ideas survive. "I'll be 90 years old soon," Castro said in his most extensive public appearance in years. "Soon I'll be like all the others. The time will come for all of us, but the ideas of the Cuban communists will remain as proof on this planet that if they are worked at with fervor and dignity, they can produce the material and cultural goods that human beings need, and we need to fight without a truce to obtain them," unquote. Yes, our good martini is that Fidel Castro is probably going to die soon, and there's probably several of you out there thinking, that is horrible. Even though we would disagree with him strongly, it is never good to wish someone's death. Jim, we strongly disagree with that.
You don't wish for other people's death often.
Well, you don't, but when it comes to weighing the balance, you have people in Cuba whose lives have been miserable for decades upon decades because this guy came into power violently under false pretenses and then sucked the rights away from everyone there, leading to just misery upon misery. And now the regime is in its hopefully final years with this particular generation. And normally that would be a good time for perhaps kicking the commies out of power. But thanks to the president of the United States, that's been made all the more difficult now because we normalize relations with them for absolutely nothing in exchange. So, but the hope for the Cuban people to actually see some freedom is for the Castros to die.
Yeah, and something to note here, you know, every time somebody does either a documentary on Castro or a news report on Castro, it's always like Fidel Castro, the bearded former baseball pitcher, famous for his cigars and long speeches, who has outlasted 10 U.S. presidents. And they say outlasting, like, good for him, you know. He must be really popular. No, it's because they don't have free elections there. You know how a dictator stays on power? They kill anybody who could threaten them, and they don't die themselves. That's all you have to do. You don't have to be a good leader. You don't have to be a popular leader. You don't have to be successful. You don't have to help your people prosper. The downside of this good martini of Castro dying soon are probably, we're just going to be tearing our hair out at the obituaries and some of the coverage of it. Having said that, Greg, on my office wall is a fake movie poster for a 1981 film, Ronald Reagan, Bedtime for Brezhnev. It imagines a Western featuring Ronald Reagan and Leonid Brezhnev. But they also, in addition to the corner, they have a cast of other supporting characters. And so they have the Honorable George Bush and General Alexander Haig as some of the good cowboys, Henry Kissinger as Doc. And then the bad guys, led by the Brezhnev gang, feature Colonel Muammar Gaddafi and Fidel Castro. And I go down the list on all the people in this, you know, this poster from 1981 who are still alive and still dead. Muammar Gaddafi famously shot in the head by a guy wearing a Yankees cap. Meaning that I have a suspicion, Greg, that at some point in his life, Muammar Gaddafi had a nightmare in which a prophecy was told that someday you will be shot in the head by a Yankee. And he figured it was the Americans. He didn't realize it was his own people. Someday they'll put the last X on that poster and Fidel Castro will leave the stage, and there'll be an honest accounting of the crimes of him and his regime, how he did not provide the Cuban people what he promised and, in fact, ended up being every bit as oppressive as the regime that followed him, creating a system in which people will risk their lives over 90 miles of shark-infested waters rather than continue to live under his regime. And that's hopefully someday we get an honest accounting of it, but it looks like one horrible chapter in the history of Cuba is about to come to an end.
Yes, and that will be worth celebrating. Unfortunately, his brother looks hale and hearty, while Fidel does not in the picture that accompanies this story. Jim, with that movie poster you just mentioned, I'm still trying to picture Henry Kissinger in a Western.
Yeah, he's wearing one of the white hats. He's got a bandana around his neck. Haig looks like one of the U.S. cavalry troops of that era. And the picture of George H.W. Bush circa 1981 looks a heck of a lot like his son circa 2000. Oh, and of course, the movie is co-starring Nancy Davis.
Of course, of course.
And at the bottom it says, based on original concept by Barry Goldwater.
Very Very good. All right, on to the bad martini now, and credit where credit is due. Donald Trump absolutely dominated the New York Republican presidential primary, got about 60% of the vote, which is even better than the polls that showed him dominating the race suggested he would do. He easily won all of the at-large delegates, and oddly enough, it looks like he's going to lose Manhattan, but pretty much dominated the state everywhere else. So he's going to get the vast majority of the 95 delegates. We'll see exactly what the totals are. Kasich's going to grab a couple. Ted Cruz shut out completely. Over on the Democratic side, when the polls first closed, we heard about all these exit polls that showed it being perhaps a 3 or 4 point race. And Bernie Sanders may have really closed the gap as he promised. No. Hillary Clinton wins by about 16 points, 58-42. So she gets, obviously, the proportional delegates, which only make it that much closer to impossible for Bernie Sanders to catch up just in pledged delegates, never even mind when you put on her whole stack of superdelegates. So, Jim, we knew this was coming. This wasn't a huge surprise. Maybe just the domination on both sides a little bit more than we expected. And we're only going to get more of it next week, certainly on the Republican side, with a lot of blue states or deep, deep purple states that are very likely to be strong for Trump.
Yeah. Greg, you and I in past Martini podcasts have talked about how when the media covers a Republican primary fight, and this has been a year of intense and visceral and probably long-lasting primary fights, the tone is, you know, always one of, you know, oh my goodness, it was absolute WrestleMania at the Republican debate as they are just tearing each other to pieces, you know. Trump is this horrible demagogue, and Ted Cruz is this slimy guy you wouldn't trust as far as you can throw, and John Kasich just keeps yammering. Oh, what a freak show. It is the bar scene from Star Wars. Keep fighting, guys. You know, more blood, more blood. And the subtext to when, you know, when Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton go at it, it always feels like, you know, you go over to the dinner party and the husband and wife start fighting and it's very awkward for everyone. You know, oh, Bernie Sanders just he brought up her speeches to Wall Street and it just was out of line. And why can't they stick to policy? Why does it have to get so personal? This is why people don't like politics, Greg. It's really unfortunate. Bernie Sanders rode this 9-state winning streak into it. There was a national poll we discussed yesterday that had Hillary Clinton at 50% and Bernie Sanders at 48%, right? I mean, if you want to argue that the person who's running best at the end of the primaries is the person who should be the nominee, kind of this argument that, you know, sports championships don't go to the best team, they go to the team playing best at the end of the season. There's an argument to be said that Sanders, as this has gone on, has become a better candidate and that Hillary has gotten worse. That mostly what she has done is managed to not squander her previous enormous lead to the point where she's going to lose it. And she's going to kind of limp into the nomination. But the media isn't going to want to pay much attention to that because there's this fantastic blood sport going on the Republican side. And suspicion is that the media is going to lose interest in this primary really fast because they are uncomfortable with Democratic fights and they love Republican fights. Chances are that particularly with Trump having won big, the outlook for him in the states next week looks pretty darn good. There's going to be a more intense fighting and a, you know, kind of an all hands on deck effort to prevent Trump the nomination. And he will go into Cleveland probably being able to make the case that not only did he win a majority of states, he won a large majority of states and he has the most votes. And if he doesn't come close to 1,237, he'll be able to say, hey, this was close enough. I've won the most. I should get this. And I think there's going to be a very intense fight in Cleveland about this, which is probably a good segue to our next martini, Greg.
Absolutely right. We saw weeks ago Roger Stone putting out the message on one of the radio shows, I can't remember which one, I think it was Stephen Molyneux's show, were basically saying, we think that Cruz is playing a dirty game here with these delegate selection processes in the different states, so we're going to get the list of delegates and let everyone know where their hotels are and what rooms they're in, and then you can go in there and try to convince them to stick with Donald Trump. And now there's another guy who's a colleague of Roger Stone. His name is Gary Forbes. He's with the Forbes Group. And he put something out recently that said, wanted teams to stop Colorado, Wyoming delegates from attending Cleveland Convention in July. We are urging groups in both states to organize and mobilize against this complete, blatant corruption by making a stand. The delegates chosen in these states without any elections must not be allowed to vote, in all caps. Folks, it is too late to try to correct the processes that these sleazy politicians are using against us. We must find our own ways. Here's what we suggest. Step one. Create a database of all delegates in both states, including name, address, telephone number, and photo. To stop them, we need to know who they are, By the way, all these delegates in these states, to our knowledge, are committed to Cruz without any input from WTP. I'm not sure what that is. Step two, build a team of aggressive pro-Trump groups.
We the people, Greg.
Oh, sorry. Without any input from we
the fact that you don't know that acronym shows you're one of the elites, Greg.
Step two, build a team of aggressive pro-Trump groups, including bikers, truckers, unions, support groups, etc. And again, in all caps, do not let these people make it to Cleveland in July. Be creative. Find any legal means to see to it that they don't even make it to the airport. Block streets with traffic jams. Find out their flights and hotels and figure out ways to cancel their tickets and reservations. If you do not want this election to be stolen from us, you and your teams must take extremely aggressive actions. Please leave prevention ideas below at the comments. So, Jim, this has the makings of a great adventure movie if it wasn't so darn serious about physically stopping people from taking part in the process.
This Gary Forbes character, a couple important points to make in this. One, find any legal means to see to it that they don't even make it to the airport. You're really not legally permitted to prevent someone from going to the airport. You, citizen Gary Forbes, do not have the authority to say, I don't like you, delegate, so I'm not going to let you go to the airport. No, you have freedom of movement in this country. You do not have any, you don't have any state authority. You don't have arrest authority. You can't make a citizen's arrest. So when they say, figure out their flights and hotels and figure out ways to cancel their tickets and reservations. Well, if you call up and cancel claiming to be them, you're committing fraud. So that's not a legal way either. And kind of at the heart of this, and this is, you know, maybe this is the most extreme example of this impulse going through a portion of the Trump base, is this argument that the laws don't matter. Like, we're angry about the rules. We don't like the fact that, you know, Ted Cruz keeps going to these conventions and walking away with a whole lot of delegates because his people show up and ours don't, because his people know which delegates to vote for and ours don't because of lack of organization on our side. We're not going to think about that because then we'd have to take responsibility for ourselves. We're going to tell ourselves that we've been cheated out of this. We've been wronged, and because they've violated – well, they haven't violated the rules, but they violated the rules that we think should be there. We're going to punish you. And it's very clear here. So he puts this, be very aggressive, right? And then, of course, you know, creating the database, name, address, telephone number, and photo. Gee, what do you think he's going to do with that? All right. What has happened to the state chairman in Colorado? What that happens, they have their exposure. There's another post where he says, find pictures of their families, which I think is another example of just the moral level we're dealing with here. These are people who are comfortable with threats and intimidation. These are people who deep down, they don't really believe in America. Deep down, they don't really believe in the rule of law. They don't believe in the idea of established rules of decorum and how you negotiate settlements. And for all their talk of deal-making and their love of Trump and deal-making, they don't believe in following laws. They don't believe in following rules. They believe in intimidation. They believe in force. And that, if anything, that's not just what America is designed to oppose. That's what human civilization is trying to oppose. There are a lot of bad things about the Trump movement, but I do kind of feel like it has empowered every resentful, angry, wannabe bully in this country who believes that they've been unfairly denied something in life that they were supposed to get. And now here is their chance. They're going to take it back. They're going to throw their weight around. They will intimidate you for having the audacity to stand in their way. And this is thuggishness. We deserve better than this as a country. And hopefully, you know, the Trump campaign will have enough good sense to say if they're associated with this, it's only going to repel these delegates even more. The Republican Party cannot become the party of thuggishness. So as you know, if the Trump folks had the wherewithal to recognize the image they are accumulating, the image that is the picture of themselves of them that is being painted right now, they would back away from this and renounce it. But my guess is they find it they like it. It's part of their character. It's who they are. And it's what we can come to expect from Trump and the Trump movement.
Jim, I can't remember if you wrote this or somebody else at National Review wrote it. I just know that I didn't write it. The idea that normally conservatives, in reacting to somebody like Obama, who's grabbing for power, as we see in the immigration case at the Supreme Court this week and many other issues that we believe is beyond the constitutional scope of the office, normally want somebody to come in and enforce the Constitution and rein that power back in. But instead, a huge portion of the Republican turnout this year wants another strongman who will just use the strongman powers to eventually move things kind of back in the other direction, but not necessarily use constitutional tactics to get there.
Yeah, we spent a lot of time saying how important the Constitution is, and the Tea Party movements, right? Everybody who's out there, you know, look, you'll go back to the Constitution. Apparently, they don't mean that anymore, Greg. It was just like an argument of convenience at that time and that moment. And deep down, it didn't really mean anything to any of these people. And it's not just a, you know, as Trump would say, sad on Twitter. It's not just sad. It's a deeply disheartening idea, because ultimately our dedication to the Constitution is the only thing that separates us from the basket cases in other countries.
Exciting Wednesday. What a happy note to close on.
Happy Wednesday, everybody. Looking forward to Thursday.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.